Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest today is calling himself Max Coins. He's been a guest on this show for several times, sometimes with other names. He's a friend of both Richard's and mine. He's had a lot of similar gambling experiences that I have, and he and his buddies are perverted in their own special way, which I think we'll all find interesting today. Max Coins, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Thank you.
Before we get started, tell me about Sam, and then because there's a lot of stories here involving Sam.
Okay, so just to give you a little bit of background, So I've been gambling for almost 30 years now, but I'm really not that old.
So you say.
Yeah, I guess. I started at 17. I gambled in six states before I was 21. Basically a lot of the experiences that I had were in college. I went to Caltech and had some friends there who, you know, through various things. It's really funny because, just as an aside, since I've moved to Vegas, 6 years ago, I've gotten a chance to meet a lot of our counterparts at MIT and things like that. And basically the difference was that those guys had a bunch of money and we did not. We never worked out how to scale this thing up very quickly in college. And I don't really think that was our goal. I think we were just more excited about beating the games. I have a friend who lives out here now who I attended college with, and we're going to refer to him as Sam. So Sam and I certainly have maintained a friendship for all of these years, and it's basically my fault that he moved to Vegas right out of college, and it's his fault that I moved out here 6 years ago. So,
So we have a mutual blame society here. Okay. Right. So, one of the stories involves a combination of Sam's Town and Binion's. How did that work out?
Okay, so we, you know, at the time when we were going to Vegas, a lot of things that we did were really just to amuse ourselves. And so we would kind of do various pranks at casinos. So I'll tell you a couple of stories with that. The one that is my favorite is that Sam and I were at Binion's, and we used to go to, various downtown casinos and count cards and just, you know, do some very low roller type of promotions, which I'm sure we'll get to in a bit. But at Binion's, Sam happened to have some playing cards in his pocket. We would practice throwing playing cards kind of in parking garages and things like that. And he happened to have these in his pocket and got the bright idea that dropping a few of these cards in front of a blackjack table might cause some problems with the casino personnel. So the cards were from Sam's Town. They weren't even from Binion's or whatever. And so, you know, obviously in college, we didn't really think through all the consequences. But in this case, probably the worst thing that could get us on would be littering. There certainly wasn't any cheating involved. We weren't even playing a game. So he drops a bunch of cards just in front of a blackjack table, and then we move about 25 feet away and just start watching. And within a few minutes, there's probably six or seven guys in suits that just descend upon this, and they're looking at the cards and examining and looking around. And I mean, it was really funny. Like, this is their least favorite thing to find in front of a blackjack table, is a bunch of playing cards on the floor. So obviously there's no harm or anything. And I guess back in the day, I mean, this was in the mid-90s, or early 90s, I guess, the surveillance probably wasn't all that sophisticated, and they might have worked out that we dropped some cards. But again, there was no malicious anything. It just was really funny.
I could see them totally freaking out over that.
And just kind of in a similar vein, there was a promotion at the Sahara also, which I remember you used to, when you would buy a $10 roll of quarters, they would punch a card. And when you filled up the card, so there were, you'd get 12 punches or whatever, they would give you some of these. They look like dollar coins, but they were made of aluminum. And there was one machine right in front of the cashier that you could put these into. And it was a really, really old fashioned real slot machine. And, so you'd put these coins in and maybe after like playing them, you might win $2. Like there was really no chance of any sort of jackpot or anything. It was just kind of like a little cheap promotion they could get for encouraging people to buy rolls of quarters. Well, you know, we of course worked out that you could just buy quarters and then sell them back to the cashier. But what would be even easier, Sam designed a chisel that was in the same shape as the Sahara logo, so we could just punch our own cards. And again, we didn't really see the value in dropping them in this machine because, you know, it would take a bunch of time and, you know, just for $2. And our goal wasn't really to rip off the casino. It was actually to do a prank. And so what we would do is keep turning these cards in. And instead of putting the coins in the slot machine, we would just take the coins home or take them back. And at some point, we ran the Sahara out of these coins.
Actually, those coins probably are worth something today.
I'm sure if we had held on to them. But what we would do with the coins is we'd do little social experiments. So we'd have these buckets of coins. And we'd take them to other casinos and, like, leave them in slot trays or put them on the floor or whatever, because they look like coins, right? And just watch what people would do if they, you know, noticed a bunch of coins sitting there or even, like, a bucket of coins. Just see, you know, because people wouldn't just take the money necessarily. They'd get all shifty-eyed and, you know, it was just fun to observe what people did with these, you know. And, yeah, we did lots of other things with the coins. I don't think I even have any of them. I might in a box somewhere, But yeah, at one point, Sahara said, "Oh, I'm sorry, we're not doing that promotion anymore. We ran out of coins."
So I'm unclear as to when things changed in Las Vegas. So at that point, machines were already accepting bills and credits and not using coins anymore?
Well, some of them were, some of them weren't. I mean, at that time, again, this is early 90s, so there certainly wasn't the ticket in. That didn't really start happening, as I recall, until about 2000 or so. But most of the casinos were still, the slots were coin operated. Some of them had bill acceptors, but.
So you couldn't use those coins in a normal dollar slot as dollar coins?
No. They just looked like dollar coins, except they were aluminum, so the machines would spit them out. So people, you know, when they would take them, they couldn't use them for anything. And nobody would, I mean, they said Sahara on them, so I guess they could go back and find it and whatever. So if anything, Sahara might have gotten a little bit of extra promotional advertising from us. But
as I recall, when that promotion ended, they would give you little booklets, and every time you bought in, a change girl would indicate that you bought in for $10 and sign it. And so on this page, you would see like 7 different signatures. So it became clear after a while that they could not tell whose signature was an employee there and whose wasn't. As long as you had a black pen, you could fill up these books quite quickly. And once you had so many signatures for buying in coins, then you got a free meal at the coffee shop. Now, this was not the a Bellagio coffee shop, but it was food. And when you're scrounging, food is food. So got a lot of good meals that way.
No, it's true. And in fact, now that you mentioned those coupon books, so another thing that we did at Sahara was when they started doing the coupon books, there were several like $5 match plays. There was a $50 through Baccarat on Banker without having to pay commission, you know, like some like low edge sort of things. We ended up befriending the lady in who would pass out the coupon books because they would give one to you once per day, or at least that was their stated policy. But we would keep asking this lady for more, and, you know, we would stop and chit chat with her and everything. And she definitely liked us. And so she would give us more coupon books. And at one point, she just gave us a whole box full of them. I mean, this was, you know, there might have been 400 coupon books in this box or something like that. It was amazing. We just took it out to Sam's car, and we would just go through, and we knew where all the relevant coupons were, because most of the coupons were just like buy one, get one drink or something, which is dumb. but you know, the ones that were gaming related, we would just rip them off and go back in and just try to do match plays until the dealer would notice us, and then we go to the other side of the casino and do more match plays, and then at some point we'd have to wait for the shift to change, because if the pit boss ever figured out what was going on, they might shut it down. And the Baccarat team, no one ever played Baccarat at the Sahara. I don't even know why they had a table there. But we would go there and use those, and at some point, you know, they would tell us we couldn't use it anymore, and there was only one table. And they called us the Coupon Boys, and so we would show up, and they'd be like, "Oh, the Coupon Boys!" Like we got to know like dealers and things just because we had so many of these coupons. We probably made like, I'd say, over $1,000 just from, you know, these little things by the time all was said and done. And they got rid of the coupon books like after that, at least, you know, to my knowledge. We weren't, at least our friend was no longer back there. I don't think it was related to us, but like everything that comes to an end.
I never did that at Sahara, but I did similar things at Stardust and Riviera and Silver Slipper and a few others. So I would, on these coupon books that you were supposed to tear them out just before you used them. So we would have them pre-torn out, but then put into a blank cover so it looked like we were tearing them out just before we used it. And there was one specific to Baccarat at one of the casinos. And when you started playing Baccarat, when a new player came up, that casino would not keep going from the deck that they had. They would reshuffle six decks and start over again. That was that particular casino that made my mini back. But yeah, so I would show up with my coupon, and he goes, "You're going to make me shuffle six decks so you can use one lousy coupon." You know, and so my response is, what else do you have to do right now? And sometimes they would just flip me over a dollar or two, which would be the win on the coupon book. Anyway, I would happily go away, leave my coupon, and go on to the next place in the casino.
Now that you mentioned that, I remember that that's probably why the Baccarat team like would notice us, because they would leave the six decks out, and only when there was a player at the table would they shuffle them and put them in the shoe. And then if time passed where there were no players, they'd actually have to take them out of the shoe and reform them. That, I guess, was their policy. So I can see why they, because they used to tell us, like, "Why don't you come back and do some real gambling?" Like, they try to get us to play more. And we're like, "No, that's okay. Not interested."
Well, but you do. At some places, they had, I think it was Stardust, had a 6 for 5 and a 12 for 10 in the same coupon book at Blackjack. And so you go there with both coupons, and if the count was plus after the two hands, you kept playing. If the count wasn't, you didn't. So your count was never plus enough so you had as much as a 12 to 10 advantage. But it was still, if it was plus, kept playing. And so occasionally we would give them extra action.
Oh, there you go.
When I was a dealer at the Castaways, they had these coupon books. And they must have been giving them away in gas stations or grocery stores or something. Because, you know, there were guys, you know, Anthony Curtis, I think, was one of them, you know, that would just come in with stacks and stacks. And basically, they would keep playing these coupons until you told them they couldn't play anymore. And of course, the dealers hated it.
Oh yeah, because you have to drop those as though they're putting the money in, and then
and the guys who played the coupons, of course, would never tip. So you know, it was just a pain in the ass.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No, and in fact, there was one play in particular at Sahara that I remember. So we used to count cards, you know, just. And of course, you know, being the nerds that we were, we weren't satisfied with just like regular count. We used like Wong double halves, which is like a three level count. And, you know, just it's completely, I mean, you know, knowing now what I do, it's like, you know, a lot of those, the extra steps that we took really did not add very much to our expected value. And we didn't really do a whole lot of blackjack anyway, so it didn't really matter. But we also would memorize all of the strategy changes and things like that. And there's one play that we noticed on the chart, which is that if the deck is very negative, and again, completely irrelevant to like normal card counting, because your bet is never very big when this happens, but there's a case when you actually should hit hard 17 against the dealer's ace. And we were so excited that that this came up one time at the Sahara. So, you know, in using we're using the coupon books and everything, we'd been sitting at the table, and of course this came up, and we still had coupons left, and of course the deck was negative, but it doesn't matter because we have coupons. And although I'm not sure if that changed the math, but anyway, that's irrelevant. Anyway, I was at the third base seat and got my hard 17, and it was a table that had multiple other people at it, and I hit, and not only did I bust, but then that caused the dealer to draw to 21. So I got up and left, right? I mean, because blackjack players, you know, they have a funny thing about the people in third base affecting their outcome. And I guess while this is technically correct, it's like a Schrodinger's cat kind of situation, right? You don't observe the order of the deck until it actually comes out. So there really is an effect that is like that. But yeah, they all left. This is the worst blackjack play they'd ever seen, I'm sure.
Oh, you double down on a natural. That'll get them too.
Oh yeah.
I had a friend, I think I called him Abe in the book, who would get a lot of these coupon books. There were 6 to 5 at some casino, and he would have a bunch of them. The dealers would hate it, except Abe would say every other one of these coupons is a tip for you. So he'd bet one where with a tip for him, and the next one would be a tip for the coupon for the dealer, and then so the dealers put up with this because every other one was a tip for them, and of course that was they allowed him to use all the coupons that he had, which was a pretty clever way to do it, I think.
Yeah, you cut your EV in half, but yeah, if otherwise you're not going to get to play all the coupons, so.
Yeah, so which actually increases your EV because you can't use them all.
Right.
And he was on a 4-hour program where if you play 4 hours at Nichols, you get so much money in some kind of chips, and you get a all you can keep down buffet coupon and all kinds of things. So yeah, the casinos that had those free buffets were never like the Wynn Buffet, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, that's true of, you know, places in town today. Still, some things haven't changed. Although I suppose, you know, these days buffets are going to have to change their operations model. I've not attempted to go to a buffet since things changed a few months ago.
Yeah, there are only a couple of them open that I'm aware of, and but yeah, you don't touch the food. They serve it all to you. So
yeah, I a month or so ago, the GM of the South Point came on here and said they weren't opening their buffet for a while. But I drove by there on the freeway yesterday, and it said their buffet is now open. So I have not tried it. So I don't know. Well, I suspect I will, probably in my coupons for August will be a buffet coupon, and or my mailer in August will be a buffet coupons, and those are possibly get spent. So, Vegas World, did you ever play at Vegas World, and do you have any interesting stories from there?
Oh my goodness, there are so many stories. I am so sad that Vegas World does not exist for people who have not had the pleasure of just experiencing that entire thing. I mean, this was single-handedly the goofiest casino that has ever existed. And I don't know. I mean, right these days it's the Stratosphere, right? And of course,
well, now it's the Strat. Yeah.
Oh, right. you know, back in the day, it used to be Vegas World. And in fact, building that tower, the iconic tower, is the thing I think that finally caused Bob Stupak to have to sell the place. You know, ironically, because he was, you know, the tower was his whole like grand vision and everything. But so he had lots of unusual ideas. And I actually did get to meet him once before he passed away. And I was very happy about that. And I thanked him for these experiences. This was after I just happened to see him at the Bellagio and recognized him. You know, there were so many things about this place. So to start out, the reason we started going to Vegas World is in college. The internet did exist in the early 90s, by the way. Not that people would have, you know, necessarily known this outside of the nerd world, but we used to communicate with each other on news groups called Usenet, which were basically just, you know, standard internet forums. And there was one of them called rec.gambling, and that's where people could discuss gambling type promotions. And there was one poster on there that said, hey, you know, I've been playing at Vegas World, and they keep sending, their marketing department keeps sending me better and better offers. And yes, each offer would come with a code. And the gentleman was kind enough to post what was the best code on there. So, you know, you had to have done, you know, from their records, like several of these before you qualified for this one. But the VIP code, the final one, was that you would spend, you'd put $400 on a credit card. And then when you got there, you would get a room for two nights, I believed, and you would get $1,000 of action chips, which were actually half value. We'll discuss that in a sec. Plus $200 of slot tokens, which were actually close to no value. And
I put them at 6%. That's what my calculation was.
Sure, that's fine. Yeah, 6% sounds about right. I think we estimated them to be worth $14. So yeah, we were at 7%. But and of course, you got to experience the lovely Vegas World. And
and food. You got food, too, right?
There were some other things that were not so worthwhile, in my opinion. But, you know, just straight cash value. You got ostensibly like $500 plus for your $400 investment. So we started doing this. And we noticed also that they didn't really keep track very well. So while you couldn't do more than one package under your name, if you used variants of your name, then you could still get more packages. So we were using like our first initial, middle name, and last name, or, you know, anything that you could reasonably show to be part of your driver's license was accepted. And so, you know, you could use, and their computer was just straight up string matching. So you could use, you know, misspellings and, you know, things like that. And so Sam and I would go, and sometimes they wouldn't have a lot of check-in windows open. So he would actually have a beard and then check in and then go upstairs and shave and come down and check in again. And he borrowed his brother's driver's license because they look very similar and would, you know, have other, you know. So we were getting like seven of these when we would go. And
you didn't have to use your own name. If I signed up in the name of Richard Munchkin and I created a handwritten note, Richard Munchkin hereby authorizes Bob Dancer to use his Vegas World package, and gave it to him, I could use my own ID, but it would go under his name, and I could do complete credit. And I have an infinite number of other names as long as you do that.
Yeah, I didn't even know about that play. Oh, it's so funny. Like, I'm sure there are so many ways of optimizing these things. But back to the subject of the action chips. So these action chips were not like the normal ones that you often get where you just play until the chip loses. These were one-shot deals. So if you bet, you know, $5 of action money and you won, they would take the chip and replace it with a $5 chip, an actual cashable one. And if you lost, they would just take the chip. So they were one-time use action chips, which basically makes them half value. Now, you know, the people on the Usenet forum would say, oh, just go over to roulette and, you know, put half on red and half on black and, you know, shell out $30 of your own money to cover the greens. And then you're set, you know, you cash out for a little bit lower than value. But we figured that there was got to be a much better way of doing this. Well, Another thing at Vegas World that you might recall is that they had a blackjack game where Bob Stupak was basically challenging the card counters to come in and beat this game. And the game paid even money for blackjack, one deck, and they would deal it to the last card, which meant that they would often have to shuffle mid-hand, things that you'll never, ever see these days, of course. And what was interesting about this game in the context of these action chips was that the casino would allow you to do double downs, splits, and insurance bets with real money. So you could bet $5 of action money and get an 11, and then double down with $5 of real money, which in effect is tripling down. And they didn't realize this. So with the single deck, and of course, you know, counting fairly precisely, and even being able to do like end play stuff, because again, we're doing this stupid three-level count, so it sometimes lets us predict, you know, the last card. We would have, you know, edge over this game, and I think it was actually pretty substantial, even with the blackjacks paying one for one. The strategy, of course, was really screwy. I mean, there were times you doubled down on blackjack, naturals, you would, you'd split tens, you know, quite often, because you can split again with real money, next to your fake money. And we had charts for basically when to use fake money, when to use real money. And then we keep track of the aces so you could do good insurance bets. And, insurance bets were always tricky because the dealer would try to push it back to you. It was though you were taking even money, but you say, no, please take this bet and pay this bet because it's different. And, you know, so we would go through these and it was so good. Like we started trying to buy these action chips from people because they would go away too quickly. Nobody wanted to sell them for half value. They all wanted to sell them at face value, which is, I guess, really good marketing on Vegas World's part, but it meant that we really couldn't buy any of these from other people.
Oh, if I had known you then, I would have sold you all you wanted at half value.
You know, if I remember this story correctly, when they put that game in, there was a failed card counter hole card player named Howard Grossman who went in and realized that you could beat that game if you spread enough. And he beat it pretty substantially, and Stupak ended up hiring him as the casino manager, at least shift boss level, but maybe as the casino manager. And unfortunately, Howard Grossman then sort of trained everybody, taught them all about hole cards, was the first person to stop checking the hole card, and which led to all these prisms that are now on the tables today.
Right.
He was and because of that game, Howard ended up inventing the game Superfund 21, which is basically that game with a lot of extra rules for you know, doubling down on multiple cards and all kinds of things like that. So, but yeah, he was, he then later ended up,
a counter catcher.
A counter catcher, right. He would sell his services to the casinos. He one time called me at home to bar me. He died a few years ago. So that was Howard Grossman.
Well, if you're going to talk about Howard Grossman, I got to do some commercials. We're going to be back with Max Coins in a few minutes. The South Point has more than 10,000 games returning more than 99%. This is more than anyone else has. The promotion in July is Spin to Win. Every Monday through Thursday, 3 a.m. to 2:59 a.m. the following day, players who play 2,000 points at video poker receive a free virtual spin at their machine. A player may earn up to 4 spins a day. The promotion is worth about $12, making it 0.6%, which makes a triple play because you get your normal 0.3% anyway for the first 8,000 coin each day. Since I like to play after midnight, I go in basically at midnight, play all my Monday play before 3 a.m., and then I do my Tuesday play after 3 a.m., and I do the same thing on Wednesday night. At predicted.org, there's a market where you can place small bets on the occurrence of various political happenings. The prices for who's going to win the election are changing regularly. Currently, if you think Trump's going to win the election, you can get a really good price. You can bet on who the vice president selection will be for the Democrats and even for the Republicans. Our listeners receive a one-time offer of a deposit match up to $20 at predicted.org/promo/edge. You must play the money through once and cannot withdraw it for 30 days. BlackjackApprenticeship.com is an excellent site for those of you who wish to become successful at counting cards at blackjack. There are boot camps going on, actually, as we air this show. The future ones have not been announced yet. One of the things I've been doing recently is listening to some of their old podcasts. Two of the more recent ones involve Grace the Gorilla Counter. Grace is Colin Jones' wife. They've been married 17 years, and they have 6 kids together. And at one time, she was a gorilla counter, which means she learns basic strategy really well, and Colin signals to her when to deviate from basic strategy and when to put out a bigger bet. And she enjoyed that a lot. So they answer questions from their listeners. So it is somewhat similar to when Richard and I answer our mail, but Grace has a charming presence, and she's not an AP, but she adds a lot. And so their podcasts are quite enjoyable to listen to, and I recommend them. VideoPoker.com is the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get correction on most of the games. An additional membership, the Pro membership, is sold separately at $6.95 a month or $49.95 a year. Listeners can play 1,000 hands for free to try it out at videopoker.com/GWAE. The biggest advantage of this is that it has video poker software that corrects you on both Quick Quads and Ultimate X. There's other games that correct you on too, and that are not corrected by normal software. So there are some same color royals or same color flushes. And so it has a strategy for that in there. So if those are games you enjoy or would like to get better at, it'll tell you what the return of the game is, and you can get the correct strategy for it. All right, we are returning to Max Coins, and we left off. He was exploiting Vegas World. One of the interesting things at Vegas World, that they gave you a free spin at this $1 million wheel, which had something like 7 different wheels on a 32 or 64 stop wheel that you hit. He did pay it off once. The advantage of the spin had to be worth less than a penny, an EV. But some people tried. Did you guys try that one, Max?
We did. I mean, we did it as often as they. I mean, it doesn't take much time to just spin the wheel, but unless there was a line of people. But yeah, we would do that promotion. And, you know, sometimes we'd get one of the sevens, I guess. You'd have to get 7 of them, though. Yeah, but I remember that one well. And the $1 million used to be on display right next to this machine. And it was a plexiglass cube, basically, that part of the $1 million were in Vegas World chips, which to me is cheating. Like, you can't put your own $5,000 chips in the thing. And, you know, because Binion's had a $1 million display that was actually $1 million. But this one had that. And they would have, you know, bricks of what would appear to be hundreds. But it sometimes I guess under the light and the humidity conditions, the hundred would peel away and there'd be $1 bills underneath. So it was like a brick of singles with a $100 bill on top. So there's nothing close to $1 million in there. And it was funny because they, you know, were using that as an ad campaign, but I don't, you know, I have no idea how much cash there was actually in there, but it certainly couldn't have been anywhere close to $1 million.
Yeah. One of the things about Vegas World is they had this 4-hour promotion that once you sign up, the first hour you get like $5 of free play, and if you come back after 2 hours, it's considerably more, and 3 hours, and 4 hours, it was something like $50 of free play, and, you know, worth it. But if you're going to be in there doing these promotions, or you have a room upstairs because they gave it to you, this was actually relevant EV. And I haven't asked Max about it, but I'm sure they cashed in on this. Because it was just free money laying around so you could pick it up.
Oh, yeah. No, of course. There was that. And actually, some of the free rooms, in my opinion, were negative EV. Because when they would fill up the main hotel, ship you off to the Thunderbird or the Sulinda or some of the other fine places that they affiliated with. And those were pretty scary experiences. So, we would often have multiple places to stay, just based on other promotions that we're cashing in and things like that. But yeah, the some of those places were pretty scary. Vegas World wasn't, at least at the time, I'm not sure how it is right now, isn't in the best part of town. But yeah.
Rooms in the new tower at Vegas World before they built the Stratosphere Tower, those had mirrors on the ceilings.
Oh, I remember.
And of course, I usually went by myself, and a mirror on a ceiling when you're sleeping by yourself is of limited interest. But it was fun to think about.
Especially if you have to look at Bob Dancer.
Yeah.
Well, most people didn't have that problem. So.
All right. and I guess, you know, a couple of the other things that the Vegas World package also came with: free drinks at the bar. Now, of course, casinos give you free drinks while you're in the casino, but this place actually let you go to the bar because I guess, you know, drinking alcohol, they realized, is actually pretty good expected value for the casino. So what was not good about this is that the bar that they had always smelled a little like vomit.
Oh!
we called it Bar F just because of that. And I remember reading online, like, other people sharing their Vegas World stories, and we weren't the only people to have called it Bar F, which I thought was funny. What was the other thing? Oh, yeah. This I'm not. Oh, never mind. I'm not going to tell that story. If you guys are interested, some of the previous episodes that I've been on, I've told stories where I've basically committed felonies, and in retrospect would not have done those things. I'm not telling those stories again. We did, of course, notice at Vegas World they had these 100% payback video poker machines, and they were either 10-6 jacks or better or 9-7 jacks or better. And that was actually where I discovered that video poker was kind of the way that I wanted to go forward with, you know, edge gambling. Not to mention that Sam and I had gotten barred at the Plaza, and it was not a comfortable experience. I mean, we certainly weren't, like, you know, completely mistreated, but it was one of those things where I just kind of realized that blackjack was not going to be my future. I don't really like those kind of situations. And video poker, of course, you just deal with a machine, and no one ever complains about, you know, that. Although I have gotten backed off for video poker on multiple occasions since then, and so that can still happen, but that's more of a recent phenomenon.
We've talked an awful lot about sort of these low roller grinder things. Maybe we should talk about some of your high roller play that came later on.
Sure. So, you know, that's a whole other topic. I mean, you can still do pranks at a high level, which I'll tell you about there too. But basically, like, after college, and of course, like I said, during college, I didn't have any money. After college, I went and started trading options. And so I ended up getting, like, a lot more income and could sustain, you know, gambling at a much higher level. And although I've never just exclusively played professionally, to me, it's more about the fun of just beating the casino at their own game. And I've certainly met so many people, and many of these fine folks have been your guests on the show, that have convinced me that every single game under the right circumstance is beatable. And I certainly never realized that at the time. But sticking with kind of, you know, video poker and promotions and things like this. So the, actually, you know what? I'm going to tell some funny stories first. So one of the high roller experiences that I have when Bellagio first opened, for various reasons, it was good to play in their high limit room. And, of course, when you do this, and, you know, in the early days, video poker used to count the same as slots as far as their game tracking was concerned. So you could actually be playing a game that's, you know, all in all over 100%, and they were comping it like a slot machine. People who went the table games route never really experienced this kind of thing. But, you know, to just have the Bellagio just throwing everything possible at you while you're sitting there making money on something is pretty incredible. So at one point, they gave us one of these, they gave me one of these penthouse suites, and I was there with a couple of friends, and, you know, we all just stayed together. It was just easier that way. And so the room certainly was big enough. So we go upstairs to the room, and I had ordered a cot, since we didn't all just want to sleep in the king bed. And, you know, the cot showed up, and my friend pulled back the sheets, and there was a poop in the middle of the cot.
Oh, my God.
Now, this is at the Bellagio in, like, a really deluxe suite and everything like that. So so we laughed because, you know, we were just out of college and everything. And, you know, this is funny to us. We're a bunch of guys. Like, you know, we were not, like, you know, some of parts of us were appalled. But, you know, we were more interested in who was going to have to take the cot. And I called the housekeeping and, you know, basically explained all this to them. And the lady was just mortified. And, you know, she got the manager and everything, and I'm laughing about this still. And the manager is like, oh, you know, we're gonna pay for your whole stay. And I said, oh, you're already doing that. And they're like, well, we can pay for all the food in your stay. I said, well, I'm already doing that. She's like, well, is there anything else I could offer you? And I said, how about a new cot? And she's like, of course. And she, you know, of course they get the cot and everything. It's just something funny that I thought. I mean, you know, I'm sure they were trying to do damage control. I didn't want to shake them down for, like, money, although I suppose I could have. I was just more interested in this being a funny story. So, yeah. And, of course, I'm not going to write reviews or, like, I don't have anything, you know, any ill will toward the Bellagio. And I'm sure it was, you know, either a previous guest or, you know, some disgruntled staff or something like that. And obviously the hotel can't really control all of that. But I thought it was funny anyway. Also at the Bellagio, I remember, you know, I got to meet lots of interesting people in the high limit room, including famous, let's just say famous politicians and celebrities. I'm not going to, like, name them, but there are people in those categories who are notorious gamblers, I guess. And yes. I've gotten to, you know, be able to chit chat with them. And I think it's kind of funny. And sometimes, you know, I'd often make conversation with the person next to me, and there was a guy who wanted to, like, we would get jackpots at the same time, and he would want to bet on, you know, who would get their jackpot done first. And, you know, he just want to, like, there's people that just like to bet on everything. And, you know, I'm like, oh, I'm sorry, I'm not a gambling man. And after a while, he pulls out of his pocket, you know, something like $1 million worth of chips from Caesar's next door. Right. You know, I've never seen chips that, like, again, I stayed away from table games. I've never seen chips of these denominations before. And, you know, he just had a whole bunch of them in his pocket, like these $25,000 chips and whatever. And he's like, yeah, he says, I own a bunch of IHOP restaurants, and, you know, I had like 40 of them, but now I only have like 28 because of gambling and this. And it's like, oh, that's very interesting. But yeah, so you do meet, like, all kinds of folks. Yeah. And, all right. Some of the other stories, I guess, one of the things I lived in New Jersey for most of my gambling career and used to go to Atlantic City a lot. And if you recall, Atlantic City had, casinos owned by, the current president. And, what I thought was funny is that a lot of the promotions at Taj, for instance, were, you know, kind of on the goofy side. And, something that I think is kind of funny. I've actually gotten to meet Trump a few times back in the day, you know, when he was there for various promotions. We had dinner with him and Melania, like, really, like, you know, weird stuff. Like,
this would have been before Melania, though, wouldn't it?
No, he was dating her, I guess. She was the poster girl for Trump Marina before they actually got married. I don't know if you remember. Like, when you would go into the elevator there, that, like, you know, you would see Melania, but it was like 20-year-old Melania on a poster, right? So I don't really know, like, at what, you know, whatever, but, you know, he was there with Melania, I guess. This was probably, Yeah, it might have been late 90s or early 2000s or something. But anyway, I one time they were giving away the Art of the Comeback book that he had written, and he signed it for me. And when we were moving here, this was 7 years ago, we had a garage sale, and I sold the book for $1, right? And in retrospect, that was probably not a good sale, because I think that might have fetched higher on eBay these days. But of course, nobody in 2013 would ever figure out, you know, that this could have happened. but anyway, the best promo at Taj was a, I hesitate to call it a slot tournament because slots were not involved in this, but they had brought in all of these training devices for race car drivers. So they were basically arcade games. And, you know, all of the high-end slot people were invited to participate, and you basically did a lap on the track. And the fastest one would get $20,000. And, you know, there were different prizes that went down. And as soon as I heard about this, I was like, oh, my goodness. Like, I've seen all the people that show up to the slot tournaments, right? They're twice my age, at least. And none of them have any video game experience. I mean, I grew up playing video games, and I still do. And it's just, you know, I'm like, there's no way I'm losing this thing. Well, the machine that I got on, they don't let you do any practice. And I was driving very aggressively on this, and you know, bumping other cars and things like that. And the game basically glitched out just because it was not expecting you to drive this aggressively, because it's supposed to be a training thing, not a video game. And the game froze up, and they wouldn't let me try again. So I got disqualified. But I was definitely going to win this thing otherwise. Anyway, that was some of the Taj stuff.
So ruining all those cars in the game isn't the felony that you don't want to talk about, huh?
No. There's a few of those, though. I mean, I could talk about one of them a bit, because this was a Taj, but I don't really think it was a felony. And I actually, you know, deliberately didn't do this because I was worried about what would happen. But the I was playing $25 video poker in Taj, and the $25 coins, this was also before they did. I'm not sure if they didn't have bill acceptors, or maybe it's just because the coins were faster to feed. For whatever reason, I would buy coins and feed them that way. And the coins, as they got bigger in denomination, would get bigger in size. And I don't know if you recall, but the $25 coins were like these, like, you know, saucers. You had to, and it was just ridiculous, like, how big these things got. I think in Vegas they were different, but Atlantic City, the $25 coins were definitely very big. And I found, you know, I would hold five of them in my hand and drop them all in at once. Well, the machine I was playing, after I did this, I would drop them very quickly in, like one after the other. And sometimes the game would start and one of the coins would fall out into the tray. And I could actually do this like fairly repeatedly. So I was getting to play a $125 game for $100. And I'm doing this for a while. And of course, this is like $3,000 an hour or something ridiculous like that, just because of the overlay on, you know, getting five for four. At that point, I decided that this was just not going to be a good idea to continue, and I did not even want to give myself the chance to do it again. So I did not go back to the Taj for an entire year. I didn't even go back to the place because I didn't want to be tempted to doing this, because it's, you know, I think there could be, you know, they might figure this out and there could be consequences to this. But so I think, did the right thing, even though potentially it could have been very good, but I didn't think I could handle that information myself. So I thought it was to just stay away. I don't know. I mean, do you have any experiences that are similar where you've had like, I don't know, I guess ethical issues or, you know, that kind of thing?
Well, I wrote about more of them in my book than was probably wise. but they were all, the ones I wrote about were all low roller plays. And did not have any $3,000 an hour plays fishy that I wrote about. Other than, and this wasn't illegal at all, there used to be, when they had coin machines, at a lot of casinos, like if you got a dollar royal flush of, you know, for $4,000, when they paid it off, you'd get your $4,000, and then they would reach into the hopper and put in 5 coins so you could play the next hand. And that was a policy on a lot of games. And that was so they wouldn't insist you play it off, but they made it for free, and so you did it. And that didn't cost them very much. But then Sunset Station put in a $100 machine with a very bad pace, 7-5 bonus or something, which was a 98% game. Nobody with a clue was going to play a 98% game. But every time you got 3 of a kind or higher, you got an extra $500. So a bunch of us got together and pooled our money to play this, because none of us were close to being able to play $500 at a time. It was comfortable. And the first time it happened, the slot floor people are looking at each other. Are we supposed to be giving you $500 extra every time? And we go, well, that's the house policy. And so it lasted about 9 plays. And it was absolutely impossible to lose money on the deal, but we did. They cut it off before they could do it. They had another one of those at Luxor, where on a $10 machine, for whatever reason, jacks are better. But the full house, $450, would lock up. The machine was set so that it would lock up at $400. So when you would get a full house, they would pay an extra five coins, which is $50. Now, you get a full house every 90 hands, round numbers. And on a game that starts out 99.54, and you get an extra 5 coins every 100 hands, that's 5%. And so that was a pretty sweet deal. Didn't last a whole long time, but while it did, I was there.
Right, but those are not things that you could, you know. I mean, I agree with Max that given what has happened to plays, you know, like the guys who figured out the double up thing and stuff like that, and all of the criminal charges that they threw at them, even if they've beaten the criminal charges. I mean, I know there are a lot of people who would have just pounded the hell out of that machine and dealt with the consequences, but there are a lot of others who, like yourself, I think would walk away from it.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of practical reasons as well as ethical reasons. I think I've certainly grown a lot ethically over the years. I mean, you know, stuff that I did in college is like I definitely wouldn't repeat for a variety of reasons. But
well, you know, as Benny Binion said, it's easy to have ethics when you got a pocket full of money.
Yeah, I suppose.
When you're young and broke, you think about things a lot differently than.
Well, even then, I didn't care that much about the money. I mean, certainly compared to other APs, like, I really just was intent on enjoying myself, and part of that was beating the casinos. So,
yeah,
you know, things like that that were kind of goofy and harmless, I thought were fine. But, you know, it's and, you know, there were a couple of other things. So there's one experience I know we're running out of time. One thing that I was able to pull off, I guess, you know, when I was trading options, is that casinos would sometimes run promotions where you didn't have to be an established player to take advantage of them. And the Atlantic City Hilton did a $3,000 loss rebate. So you would basically come in, and if you lost $3,000, they'd actually give you, I think it was $3,300 back or something like that. Like, it was actually more than 100% rebate, but not substantially more. And they did have high denomination slot machines. And so I told all of my buddies on the exchange floor, like, you know, nobody was really worried about $3,000. And of course, when I told them what was, you know, how to do this and how to play it optimally, and them all being options traders, of course, that they were able to understand that a loss rebate is basically an option. So the higher your variance, the more value that the promotion has. I mean, just like options increase with the volatility of the underlying, right? So you, so you basically want to, you know, just try to lose $3,000 as quickly as possible. And if you happen to make a bunch of money, you leave. And I think we collectively took about $80,000 from them. Just they were one-time promotions, and, you know, I just would, you know, tell everybody about them and, you know, how to do them optimally. And then of course they, at some point had put in a top dollar machine, which you could play even more optimally because that has a bonus round. And if you get to the bonus round, you can pull your card. And if you wait a little bit, then they would forget about you. And so you could make money off of this while it wasn't counting against your loss rebate. I don't think card pulling works really across the board these days, so I don't feel bad telling about it. But that was definitely a trick for overstating losses, I guess. And then just as a final thing, speaking of the loss rebate thing, Tropicana here in town before Penn Gaming owned them, they ran a promotion for which had a 20% loss rebate. And while I won't get into the specifics, it was possible to do well at this game. And we were there, you know, playing this. And at one point we noticed on one of the kiosks, it was in the standard Windows boot up screen. So the kiosks generally are run on Windows and everything like that, and they're touch screen. And you could actually access the operating system from the touch screen. I think they're never designed to be in this mode, of course. So we opened up Microsoft Paint, and then we hand drew like free money here, like an arrow pointing to the, you know, whatever. Like, we just made something silly up. I have screenshots of this because we took pictures of it with the cell phone or whatever. So we set that as the desktop and then hid the icons, right? And of course you couldn't do anything about it, but there was this really amateurish looking like free money here sign. Well, we're playing, and a little bit later my host calls me and says, "What are you doing?" And I said, "What are you talking about?" And he says, "I have surveillance here. They think that they've been hacked, and they think that you're responsible for it." And I said, "What are you talking about?" Because I, you know, and then I realized what had happened. And I said, "Oh, my goodness, we're just playing a joke. I mean, you can see that we didn't do anything, you know," because he said, "They think you hacked the system." I said, "No, it just was in a mode, and we thought it would be funny to have a, you know, a kiosk with something like that." So he called off the surveillance folks, but. Yeah, that's the way that I would go down, is doing a prank, not advantage play, really.
All right. Thank you, Max Coins. This has been fun, and we have to have you back for the rest of your stories. Before we leave, sometimes our hosts have a recommend. Richard, do you have one for us this week?
I do. I discovered this week a website called artsandculture.google.com. They also have a free app for your phone, and it is just amazing, amazing website where you can tour all kinds of museums around the world, look up any artist, basically. So I've been spending a lot of time at this website. We'll have a link in the show notes.
And Max, you have a favorite Netflix show.
Yes, I do. I just finished the third season of Dark, which is the third and final season. This is my favorite series of all time. I think it's the most intelligent show that's ever been produced. It's very difficult to keep track of, but they developed all three seasons together, so it's extremely cohesive. There's nothing that's like retrofitted. In fact, there's tons of foreshadowing and all sorts of neat stuff. And I can't really talk too much about the subject matter behind it because that would spoil some of the effect of actually watching the show. But suffice to say, I studied physics. I have a physics degree, and some of the things that come up in this show are very, very interesting take on certain topics. And I don't know. I love the show. And if I could recommend, if you don't speak German, Netflix tends to default everything to English dubbing, but the actors are actually really good in German. So turn on subtitles in English and then play the original German, you know, so that the actors can actually act, and you'll get the point. But yeah, that's my recommendation.
Thank you, Max. Thank you, Richard. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good day.